This is News and Notes. I'm Tony Cox. Sometimes we don't know when to say when. Maybe it's eating too many French fries, drinking one too many drinks, or maybe it's buying things you really don't need. But when does a little excess turn into an addiction? Today, as we continue our series on addiction, we will take a look at the psychology of addiction. Later, we'll speak with a compulsive shopper, but now we have Phil Shearer, clinical coordinator for Illinois Institute for Addiction Recovery, and Terry Shulman, founder of the Shulman Center for Compulsive Theft and Spending. Phil and Terry, welcome to News and Notes.
Thank you very much.
Phil, let's start with you. We have all had moments when we've lost control, self-control. So when does a loss of self-control become an addiction?
Well, I think addiction is defined by more than just loss of control because, as you've said, many people suffer from a loss of control at some point in their lives over something. Addiction entails other situations, other criteria such as withdrawal symptoms, the inability to adhere to self-imposed limits, continued involvement in a behavior even though consequences are piling up, and negative consequences in your life as a result of your behavior, and then continuing to try to go back and achieve success in that behavior.
Is there a difference between, Phil, a proclivity and an addiction?
Well, I suppose technically there probably is, but as an addiction specialist, what I try to look at when a person is asking the question, am I suffering from an addiction, is referring to the criteria that's laid out in the DSM-4, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, without getting into too many specifics in terms of a proclivity versus an addiction. With an alcohol or drug addiction, there are 7 criteria that that is looked at, and if a person meets just 3 of those criteria, then they meet the diagnostic criteria for dependence, and that doesn't mean that they're living on the streets and homeless and jobless, but it does mean that there's a problem that they should probably take a look at addressing.
Well, let me ask you, Terry, whether or not there is such a thing as a really addictive personality, and if there is, what are the traits of that personality?
Well, thank you for having me on. I think the notion of an addictive personality is something that we are still, as mental health professionals, studying and quantifying. I do believe there is something that I would call an addictive personality. It's not universally quantified yet, as I've said. But what I found from my reading and research and in my clinical practice of over 11 years are a number of common elements or common themes in people's lives. What you'll find often are more than one addictive process going on either simultaneously or consecutively. So a series of addictions kind of is one of the things that we look for, going from one addiction to another. And addicts are very well known for, you know, trying to stop one addiction but then replacing it with another. A lot of personality traits such as perfectionism, impulsivity, difficulty tolerating disappointment or stress, difficulty tolerating or identifying feelings, feeling feelings and expressing feelings, difficulty asking for help. These are a lot of things that I find in what we might begin to call an addictive personality.
Well, talking about that, Phil, how would a person who has, let's say, an addictive personality choose or select, and that might be the wrong word, the item or the target of their addiction? You follow me?
Well, yeah, I think I do. I think it depends on the person. Certainly there's many different mechanisms out there that provide pleasure of some type, psychological pleasure, certainly to individuals. And what the research is showing lately is that the brain chemistry changes dramatically when a person experiences an addictive type person experiences pleasure, and if they experience this pleasure often enough, it kind of resets the chemistry of the brain to needing more of a neurotransmitter called dopamine than a normal person would, and that's what would keep them that would be the hook that would keep them returning to that behavior, looking for that level of excitement that the dopamine provided. So it would depend on the, I guess, on the on that hook. I think a lot of times in my experience dealing with addicts, they talk about an experience prior to when they became addicted that was significant for them, learning that alcohol or another chemical relaxed them and provided some comfort and relaxation in an unusual situation might work for some person, a big win at the gambling tables. The acceptance one feels in the anonymity of the Internet, it would depend on the person, I think.
Let me follow that up with this, because you mentioned pleasure, and it would seem reasonable to assume that an addictive personality would be drawn to a pleasurable experience. But does that preclude pain or something less pleasurable as an addictive target as well?
Well, with addiction, painful experiences often happen, but with the delusional, along with the addiction, the mind is disturbed in the sense that it's seeking this high, if you will. Although sometimes you don't feel altered, you're seeking that pleasure again, that comfort, and in that process, you experience negative consequences, and emotionally. Your mind, I guess you can say, kind of plays tricks on you in that you develop reasons for the negativity being temporary or the displeasure being temporary. And so if you just adjust something in your behavior, then the next time you won't have that negative experience, even though that's usually not the case.
Well, Terry, later we're going to be speaking with someone who is a compulsive shopper. How can people become addicted to something like shopping or spending or shoplifting?
Yes, well, I work both with shoplifting. I work with employee theft, and I've been working with compulsive shopping and spending. And we are finding more and more that the behavior of shopping, which we all do on some level, for many people, a certain segment of people, does become very addictive, like any behavior, whether it's gambling, shoplifting, sexual addiction. So what we know is behavioral addictions can be just as powerful as what we call chemical addictions, like to drugs, alcohol, and prescription medications. And there was a Stanford study in 2006, a kind of a landmark study, that estimated that about 6% of the U.S. population, about equal number of men and women, is afflicted what is now being thought of or called a compulsive buying disorder, compulsive shopping disorder. And I think we've all had an experience of getting a kind of a higher rush from getting something new or getting a good deal, and people have different kind of experiences from their past that might lead them to be more vulnerable, such as some people have been modeled or trained to do that from being overindulged by parents, and they just continue that cycle. Others are making up for lost time by feeling deprived, both either financially, materially, or often emotionally in their younger years, and they're making up for lost time, or they're overindulging their children, or they're buying many things for other people to win love and approval. So if you get to the bottom of it, you'll see there's usually a core issue driving it. But once you start shopping and when those negative consequences click in, the addictive cycle can click in because now you're experiencing debt, maybe marital arguments, and pain and frustration, but yet now you keep going to the same activity, which is the shopping, to kind of escape that and to numb that pain. And that's when you really get into trouble.
Here's my final question. I'm going to direct it to you, Phil. Addiction suggests lack of control. And my question is whether or not people who are addicted or have addictive personalities, do they have any choice with regard to their actions?
While they're active in their addiction, no, they don't. They really, their minds function in a manner that don't allow them to make a choice. If a person who has not gotten help for a sexual addiction, let's say they're addicted to internet pornography, as long as the computer is available, they will seek that out because they know that works for them. That provides them with the pleasure that their mind is obsessing about until they can find a new way to reframe pleasure and pleasurable experiences and begin to understand the nature of what is happening to them in the addiction process, they really don't have a choice. Now, one of the things that I think happens with this concept of addiction is people that don't understand addiction think we use that term to kind of let people off the hook, and that's not the case. I mean, it is a disease that affects people. They do not have a choice, although they should be absolutely responsible for the behavior they practice while addicted.
Terry and Phil, thank you both very much for coming on.
Thank you kindly.
Thank you, Tony.
Terry Shulman is the founder of the Shulman Center for Compulsive Theft and Spending, and Phil Shearer is the clinical coordinator for Illinois Institute for Addiction Recovery. He spoke to us from the studios of WCBU in Peoria, Illinois.